All right, so Ben, we owe you a Mazel Tov, and we're gonna have our L'chaim next year, maybe, or when everyone's back after the break. We'll see. Okay, so let's pick up where we left off. We've been discussing, so we saw two main paradigms for liability and compensation. One of them is based in the theory of contract. Once there's a kinyan, once there's a schalas and malacha, so the poel is entitled to the value of the agreement. That's one basis for compensation. A different basis for compensation is the tort theory. And what we left off with last week was this question of whether the compensation for schiras poelim, the case when you cause the poel to lose an opportunity and therefore he suffers a loss and you're chayav to compensate him, so even without a kinyan, is that consistent with the principles of general nezikin, general principles of tort and halacha? So remember, Satoso says that liability here is based on Dina de Garmi. The Ktsos launched an attack really against Tosos to show that you can't make sense of the liability in terms of Chiyuve Nezikin. So Ktsos started off saying, well, maybe you can, based off the idea that there's a Chiyuv Sheves B'makom Nezek, right? Even though you're not actually paying for real losses, you're paying for lost opportunities. Maybe we do have a principle you can be chayiv for Sheves B'makom Nezek. Cole, which sugi did that come from?
Sorry, did you just say my name?
Yeah, which sugi did that come from? The idea that you're chayiv for Sheves B'makom Nezek?
Oh, Sheves B'makom Nezek, yeah. Gemara Nechovel, you pay dollars.
That's right. The sugi thereof. That's right. You lock a guy in a room, so you're chayiv to pay him for the lost wages that he suffered from not being able to work while he was locked in the room. So the Ktsos says maybe the case of Tosos' idea of Dina de Garmi for Schiras Poelim is based on this idea of Sheves B'makom Nezek. Why did the Ktsos reject that? Does anybody remember?
He thinks there's no Garmi.
That's right. He thinks you can't be chayiv for Sheves B'makom Garmi. That was the Ktsos's.
Well, it's not clear that our Sheves,
that
case is a definite
hefted.
It's also not clear that this is a definite, that this is like, that this is bad. It sounds like
Minyas
Revach, not
hefted. Yeah, right. This is also the Minyas Revach issue here, right? But you might say that Sheves is a way of being chayiv somebody for Minyas Revach. Ktsos himself thinks you can't be mechayiv here. It wouldn't work even if you hold Sheves B'makom Nezek as chayiv, because it's really Sheves B'makom Garmi. Does that sound familiar to everybody? That was the Ktsos' argument. And he quoted the Maharami Rotenberg, who seemed to have this view as well. So did the Ktsos leave us with an answer? So what did the Ktsos say the basis of liability is?
He appealed to Dover
Ava. That's right. He said, oh, maybe the basis of liability here is not Dina de Garmi, it's really Dover Ava. This is the end of the Ktsos. He says, V'nir de mehai time, magam b'shulchan aruch, lo asi alam yishum Dina de Garmi, v'chamo shakas av tosos, alam yishum dehavli Dover Ava. He thinks that appealing to Dover Ava is going to help us solve the incompatibility of the principles of Nezikin with the tort-like liability for Schiras Poelim. So Tosa seems to be saying we have to move away from paradigms of Nezek and into some special category of Nezek that arises for breach of contract, some special kind of Nezek that arises for depriving a poel of an employment opportunity. The Nesivis was more explicit about this. You'll recall the Nesivis in Shin Lamed Gimel Gimel. So what did he say? Anybody remember? Offhand? Yeah. He said two things. He says the Ktsos is right. At best, it's going to be mitzad takanas chazal, or she'amdu chazal daitan shebekach mechayven atzman lahashlema hezek. Right, so the Nesivas had two interpretations of Davar Avod. It's not going to be Dina de Garmi. Either it's a special takana of chazal, or it's a kind of omdin adas that the parties accept liability up to a certain amount. And we'll parse out those two separate ideas. And then Asivis wanted to go so far as to say that when Tosos said Dina de Garmi in our sugya, Tosos meant this takana of Chazal, special halacha in Schiras Poelim, not the general principles of Gina de Garmi. Right? This is the last paragraph of the Nesivis. V'afsha atosos kasu tizel d'ramer d'mishalem medina de Garmi, mashma l'chorem midivrem d'din gomerhu. L'fian yaz daiti nir di afsha lomer b'kavanasam d'din gomerhu. Rak kavanasam is the bold section. Kivan shetiknu chazal d'vedavar ha'aved chayiv ki'ilu mazik b'yadayim. Imkein hachanami kivan d'goram lohem hezek v'hu davar ha'aved lohem. There's going to be chiyuv. See that? So the Nesivis wants to read Tosos' appeal to Dina de Garmi as a way of getting at a special takana of Chazal for Davar Avod, which is unique to Schiras Poalim.
Also, a little unclear. One reason to come to Chazal is it exactly like Dina de Garmi, or is it, or like any Mazik related? Mazik
Yadayim? Notice he says.
Like, what is the model now that is?
That's right. Kivan Shetikna Chazal, Divid Davar Avod Chayiv Ki'ilu Maziko Biyadayim. Sounds from the Nesivis that, yes, from the pure principles of tort law, there wouldn't be liability in the Balabayish of Chazar, but Chazal were mitaken to treat it like tort liability for this case. Right? Now, yeah, let me just make one broad point here. In the very beginning of the year, in our methodological discussions, remember we set up this distinction between the moral basis of liability and just more economic considerations, right? Does that sound familiar? So this would be a clear case where the poskim might be distinguishing between them. Yeah, the pure principles of Nezikin, you might say, this is more what you're morally responsible for, right? When are you liable to compensate somebody for doing wrong to them? That's what the general rules of Nezikin tell us. Here, everybody agrees that those general rules of Nezikin, I shouldn't say everybody, but the Ksos and Nesivis are arguing the general rules of Nezikin don't apply. So strictly speaking, in terms of your moral accountability for Nezek, you're exempt. But Chazal have other considerations. They have these policy considerations, you might say, or an interest in ensuring that people can rely on these agreements, or that people don't end up losing based off these inducements, these contract-like inducements. And so Chazal made a special takanas chachamim to generate tort-like liability for a chazar de balabayis in a case of davar avod. So that's just a conceptual way of trying to bring out why, even if the liability here doesn't make sense on Nezikin principles, Chazal would want to extend it for some special interest in shoring up contractual or pre-contractual relationships. Cole.
Yeah.
You wanted to say something.
Yeah. I don't know how you feel about this. So this Davar HaAvod language precedes historically any explicit discussion of like contract. It's like the Rishonim, they use it, seem like they're groping. They realize this is not a, and they're groping for a justificatory principle for compensation in place in cases of Chazara. Is your view that our baseline assumption should be this is a way of saying Hefte without really saying it, and so maintaining an Ezekin principle? Or is their view that which I think is, they gave us, one piece of the puzzle that, like, no, a davar ha'avod, the reason why these kinds of cases can be occasions for holding somebody liable is that, the divrei avod, the whatever, the foregone opportunity or whatever it is, occurs in a, an Kenyan Sirith Poland relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a crucial question. I don't think we have enough fine-grained material yet, or sufficiently fine-grained comments in the Rishonim to take a stand on that question. But I agree with your Chakira that Davar HaAvod itself, it's a bit of an open question whether it's an extension of tort, it's an artificial extension of tort liability to our case, or is it, so you're extending Nezik into our case, or are we extending the contract a little earlier in the relationship to, you might say, not full start it, but preemptively trigger it in a case of Davar HaAvod. Is that what you're getting at, Cole?
So can I just add, you would know better than any of us, this phrase, Davar HaAvod, get used by Rishonim in other contexts?
So the Gemara uses it in our context, Davar HaAvod, with respect to a poel who breaches, when the Baal HaBayis is going to suffer an imminent loss.
Right.
The phrase Davar HaAvod comes up in Avelos and in Chol HaMoed, but it has a very different connotation there.
Different. There, the idea is like there's a. So think about a case not of like somebody picking wheat, where the wheat's going to be there the next day, but of somebody who, you know, is cooking something and they cook, you know, there's 30 minutes of work to be done on a dish that takes an hour, and they do 30 minutes of it and now we have a dish that's half done that's not going to be finished, and you're going to lose money on all the ingredients and things like that. So there, my intuition is to say that not a foregone opportunity, but you are actually costing the Baal HaBayis money. Now the question is, you might say, well, why do you have a duty not to? You're not breaking anything; you're just kind of leaving something to spoil, which sounds like a lost opportunity. Which sounds like a lost opportunity that's like closer to
Now,
you might say the only reason why, you might just give the Gemara the credit and say, well, the only reason why, you know, it's interesting to talk about a Davar HaAvod in that case is that there's a contract relationship that, you know, obligates the workers. I could buy that. It wouldn't get you all the way to, I don't think, to saying that the Baal HaBayis withdrawing is the same kind of Davar HaAvod.
Right.
But okay, I could see that.
Right. Does everybody see Cole's main chakira here? So, you see Cole's question, Yoni?
Not really, no.
Ben, do you see Cole's question? So, Cole's question is, when we talk about Davar HaAvod here, is that an artificial extension of Nezek liability to our case? So, yes, this is all grama, but Chazal want to be Mechayiv grama for a Poel who backs out, for a Baal HaBayis who backs out. And why do they want to be Mechayiv grama is an interesting question. Maybe there are policy considerations, they want to shore up contracts. But Chazal are catching you b'vchinas nezikin. That's one way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it is to say, look, if you want to collect under a contract, usually you need a kinyan, you need aschalas ha'malacha, etc. But Chazal are willing to, just like aschalas ha'malacha itself, you might say, is an artificial creation of a contractual kinyan, so too, you might say, reliance for a Davar HaAvod artificially triggers a kind of a kinyan. In which case, Davar HaAvod is just a way of preemptively triggering his chayvus of kinyanim. That's Cole's question. You see that? It's a very important question. I think I mentioned last time, if you look into the literature of promissory estoppel, which is that even if there's no contract, if you relied on somebody's promise to your detriment, there's some legal basis for collection. There's also a kind of conceptual question there whether that's based off principles of Torah or is that principles of contract. And Davar HaAvod sounds to be in that junction as well. I want to point out that if you look at the language of the Nesivis, at the end of the piece he says, Kivan shetiknu chazal diva Davar HaAvod chayev ki'ilu maziko biyadayim. That phrase sounds as though the basis for liability in Davar HaAvod is Nezek. Right? So that phrase seems to take a stand. He also talks about that the Chazara de Poel is Chashiv Mazik. So the Nesivis' language leans into Nezek-based liability. However, in the first paragraph of the Nesivis, he does say it's either Mitzat Takanos Chazal or Amdu Chazal Daitan Shebekach Mechayvin Atzman Zelazeh Lehashlim haHezek ad kedes charan. The second possibility raised by the Nesivis that the basis for compensation here is and Omer Hadas, that the parties were mischayiv themselves, that leans more into his Chayvas Midas idea, which is closer to... It's really somewhere in between. It's sui generis. That's right. They're accepting, they're voluntarily accepting liability on themselves. It's a different paradigm. You see that? It's like a contractual way of... it's an artificial way of creating liability through contract, through his chayvus. But it's not the contract entitlement of the kinyan of schiras malacha. It's really just its own little contractual provision.
It could be.
Does everybody see that?
Part of the reason why Rishonim might be using what sounds like nezek language to express a point that we understand intuitively as a contrast point is the general commitment to the idea that in Kenyan al-Davar Shalobalola, or the classic Kenyan in the Halakha, these are all kinds of Kenyan. The word Kenyan is used in a million different ways.
Yeah.
If you think that the classic kind of Kenyan is like, you know, it's basically like or something like that. Like,
that's a good point, Cole. Except that what you're saying is a reason to be skeptical about any Kenyan in Schiras Poalim, which we did see.
So there are two ways to respond to that. Either you can do what the Rises did 3 months ago and say, no, these are really Kenyanim on the first. There are two ways to respond to that. Either you could say these aren't, the Kenyan is on the person or something like that. Or you could say that, no, the din of Inkin and Avashua Bala Olam has to do with, like, you know, with Bila. And this is, you know, when the Halakha talks about a Kenyan in, you know, in
that's right.
Employment or similar cases, just to say, no, when we say in this case, we're referring to an exchange of rights and obligation. I understand all, even Bila,
right. But read the Benson article. If you read the Benson article, I think he has the best conceptual articulation of what that contractual theory would look like.
Say again? Who does?
Read the Benson article that I emailed out, which we're going to discuss in a week or two.
I have the Benson. Okay. But do you see how I...
Yes, I see what you're getting at. If you read Cole, I mean, you should all think, if you read carefully that Broyd and Wiener article... Their claim is that even all liability for contract in the halacha has to be tort-based. That's the upshot of their article.
Okay.
I think they're wrong, as I think a lot of the analysis that we're going to tease out shows. But their claim is that halacha doesn't have any conception of contracts, and so all the liability here is just mitam nezek. I think it's refuted by half the positions in the Rishonim here. Right, I think you could offer that as an explanation for the people who just talk about liability in terms of Nezek, but not for the Ramban Udi Meikamp who recognize real, and we'll see the Chaz Nishim even more strongly today, who think that there is a transfer of right and there's no Nezek dimension to the collection at all.
That would be the preferred Lumdisha outcome.
Yeah, well, I don't have a preferred outcome, but I mean, they show that there's a really separate basis of compensation under a contract, totally divorced and separate from Nezek. Let me tease out this middle ground a little further. So look here on the bottom of page 13. So we saw there are two ways of formulating this. Cole set up the main chakira. We have even the Nesivis's hedge. Is it Takanas Chazal of Nezek, or is it Umdin Das, that there's a kind of Hischaivus? Look at the Pischei Choshen, bottom of page 13, citing the Erech Shai. I have the Erech Shai here also on top of 14. So Yoni, why don't you read the Erech Shai for us? Read the Pischei Choshen citation of it, then we'll look at the Erech Shai.
Erech Shai Katav, Shav B'socher B'hem O'Kelin, B'haya Motzei, Shtaker, B'achshav Ein Motzei, Chayav.
So what's he saying? He's commenting on the Ktzos. Remember, the Ktzos thought that maybe you could explain liability here in terms of Sheves de Nezek. Right? That's why you're paying for lost opportunities, even though it's not substantive damage. It's not a real loss. You're paying for lost opportunities. And once you explain that there's liability mitam sheves, you could explain why there's liability for something more than just hefzid. The Erech Shai wants to argue that there's liability not just for Adam. There's also going to be liability if I'm socher behema, and I deprive the behema of its opportunity as well, right? The owner of the behema. So it's not, you only have sheves for nezek perpetrated against a man, a person. You don't have sheves for nezek perpetrated against the behema that we all know from Nezikin. So the Erech Shai wants to say, I could explain liability of schiras poalim even without the principle of sheves. How? Why isn't it all grama benezikin pater, like the Ktzos and the Mesivis argued? So what's his answer? If you deprive him of an opportunity elsewhere, so lav mi din shevesu, but what's the basis of liability? Mishum shekibel alav l'shalim. Okay, it doesn't really tease out, doesn't flesh out the exact reason, but he's saying that once you accepted liability to pay for what? Kiven de shekibe lasteis lam melacha ulashem kach scharam, kesheino nosein lo melacha, gam ken chayev. What's he getting at?
Saying that the contract, not just you basically by contracting the laborer, you incur a responsibility to provide him with work, not just to ensure, it's not just that that guy now has an occasion to sue you if he doesn't have work during that time. There's a personal incurrence of responsibility. The comment in the Deacon argument is that he basically says that, as long as this guy's getting paid during that time somehow, and then there's no problem. That doesn't mean you have any obligation to provide him really with work. That just means that you're liable to compensate him if there's no work around to be had.
Yeah, so you're saying there's a contract theory? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that would be, it seems consistent with the box.
Okay, I agree that this is I think there are two ways of actually understanding this. The question is whether, is he only talking about a case of post-Kinyan, or is he talking about a case even pre-Kinyan? If you look at the Erech Shai himself, look in the photocopy of the Erech Shai on the top of page 14, five lines from the bottom. La mishum sheves hu, liability is not based off sheves, to mordechai resh parakha goes to kama mavur, even though depriving the guy of the opportunity is just grama, and had he not have accepted to provide this guy with work and pay him for the services, he would be putter after a mayor. The intent of the Mordechai is kivan shekibel olav l'shalim lepoel. Since the Balabayas had das to pay the poel had he completed his labor, and the poel relied on that intent, so the intent to pay had the work been completed is enough to trigger liability in a case where the work was never done, even though that's just grama.
Well, that's not a very good argument.
So it's a little confusing as to what he's getting at.
It's not anywhere helpful than the
Pesach Kosher. Okay, so I'll tell you right. So I think there are two ways of making sense of this. One is, I think this is exactly the middle ground of ambiguity, where Cole's distinction could apply. So I think there are two ways of making sense of the liability here. He's saying it's grumma, but you might say that sometimes you're chayiv for grumma bin azikin if there's a special relationship between the parties. This is something we saw at the end of last year. And so, yes, it's grumma bin azikin, pater b'yachai b'din ishmaim, but if there's already a special relationship, a kind of hischaivus from one to the other, then that's enough to upgrade the grumma bin azikin to real nezek. And maybe that's what the Erech Shai is getting at. So you see that? So you're saying it's grumma bin azikin, but since there was hischaivus to pay had he come through, that's enough to raise the grumma to nezek. The other way of looking at it is to say, look, there's hischaivus to pay him if the work is complete. Okay, so there's basically an intent for the contract to go through. Even if the work doesn't go through, but the poel ends up relying on your promise to his detriment, like the promissory estoppel, then we extend back the hischaivus in time, not just to post-Kinyan obligation, but we extend it back to pre-Kinyan induced reliance. So you see that his formulation is somewhere in the middle ground between Nezek and Hischaivus, because he talks about both of them. He says, Zagrom ben Azikin Pater, but Kibel Olav L'Shalim. And he acknowledges that the Kibel Olav L'Shalim is, had the work been performed. It's not the artificial Kibel Olav L'Shalim, it's not the artificial Kibel Olav L'Shalim of the Nesivis that you owe your Mekabel yourself to compensate him for losses. No. It's Kibel Olav L'Shalim to pay him had the work been completed, but that's sufficient to hold you liable if it wasn't completed also, and he relied on you to his detriment. What's that, Cole?
It is true. I think on the Erech Shai, I agree with what you say hermeneutically. I find it conceptually confusing. What I will say is, it is true. The best objection to the Nezikin theory is that, what does the Kinyan even matter? The Erech Shai is pointing out that the more you're going to set, the more you rely on the Nezikin language, on the deacon thinking to get you the liability, the more you're going to think that even before the Hakkalah Kinyan, there will be a semblance of liability. If all you think is that, if you think that the trigger for this whole thing is the contract, well, before there's a contract, you've got nothing. You could have a hybrid view and say that before the contract, you have the deacon, after the contract, you have a contract.
That's the Ramban's view. The Ramban's very clear about that. The Ramban's very clear that pre-Kinyan you have liability from Nezek, Armi, or Dever Avod, and post-Kinyan you have based off Nischayev, Lashalim Lo, Machmas Malachto. Yeah. So the Ramban and the Shulchan Aruch definitely have that view. What's interesting about the Erech Shai, is that the Erech Shai thinks that specifically in the case of induced reliance, there's something about your post-Kinyan willingness to pay that could hold you liable for pre-Kinyan non-Nezek induced reliance. That's why it's a kind of interesting hybrid view. And I'm just asking, is it which one is dominant? Is it a theory of Nezek that's just made stronger by willingness to pay afterwards? Or is it a theory of contract that's just extended to pre-Haskalas Malacha on the basis of the harm caused by induced reliance? Everybody with me?
You don't even the Mordechai himself that it's probably more grammar-based?
Let's get to the Mordechai. Yair, are you with us?
Yes. You're with us.
Okay. Okay, good. Hakol, kol, kol. V'haydayim midei Yair.
Oh my goodness. Tamara, did you come up with that just now?
Has anybody ever given you a kol, kol, kol?
Are you going to do like new buffalo,
I think it's a standard greeting for me in the YU based matrix.
A kol, kol, kol?
Yeah. I think Rav Willig might have been Machadish.
Okay. Good to know. Baruch Shekivanti.
But I'm...
Okay, so Yoni here is saying that the Mordechai, let's look at the Mordechai's language, which is the source for the Aruch Shai. Mordechai Bava Kama, he's talking about all these grama cases. Mordechai's contention is that Mikana Talome Dlchola Gramos, Imikaba Allah Beferis Lashali, Mimigram Lohefsa Chuchai, right? That you can voluntarily be a Machai of yourself for grama. This was significant for the Grom Ben Zigan discussion last year because it showed that there is a basis for liability in grama. And that's why it's very easy for you to revive actual duties to pay for a grama. Even though grama is against pater, if you're a mechayiv yourself for grama, you're chayiv. So it's not like there's no liability. There's just some liability. It's just not enough to make you have to pay. And then if you're mekabel, even without a kenyan to pay, you're going to be chayiv. The Mordechai then says, v'chein asocher chamara v'pola v'gorim lahafsid scharim v'makam acher, like our sugya, Hoel v'kibel olav l'shalim chayiv, t'kulam gramos nenu, b'ilav shekibel olav hayapater. So Yoni, how do you want to read that?
Well, I'm saying within like the, I mean, I think ambiguity is possible within that line itself, but I'm saying within the general examples, within the general context, it seems pretty clear he's like talking about a grama din, like garmi din, really. Is that he's trying to explain like why is garmi applying one case to one to the other case, even if it's not already there. So
right.
He's saying that, like half of the examples have right. Nothing to do with employment.
Right? That's
right. You don't have to do with sales, have to deal with, like, anytime I promise I'll buy something off of you.
I think that's a good idea. So you're saying from context, the Mordechai is telling us these are the cases where grama can be chayiv. Grama is going to be chayiv when kibbal of l'shalim in some sense.
Yeah, and that's true both for employment, but also for sales and, other...
So you're saying this shows that it's a theory, at least in the Mordechai's view, it's a theory of grama. A theory of liability for grama. I think that's an excellent idea. It's an open question to Aruch Shai himself, how he is using that. Good. Now, I wanted to look at an in-between view, another in-between view that comes out of Rabbi Akiva Eiger. Maybe the Ritva also on the Mishnah, and the first Mishnah in our Parak. So really, right, the paradigm we've set up, you have the Kenyan-based views, the contract-based views on the one hand, the tort-based views on the other hand, then you have Davar HaAvod somewhere in between. We're not sure exactly how to cash out Davar HaAvod. Nesivah had his formulation, Aruch Shai seems to have a formulation, though it's not clear he's giving us a formulation of Davar HaAvod itself, just explaining the same din. If you look at Rabbi Akiva Eiger in Drush V'Chiddush, Rabbi Akiva Eiger introduces the idea of Hischaivus Midin Arev in our sugya, which I think is almost, it's another in-between kind of ground for liability. So how would Hischaivus Midin Arev work? How would that work? So what's an Arev? Ben? I know it's a fast day, we're all...
Yeah. Right, an Ari is a debtor, right?
What's that called?
Isn't an Ari the debt idea? It's like,
yeah, he's a guarantor. An Ari is a guarantor. Right? Anochi Arvanu Miyadi Tivakshanu. So usually the Ari is the person who guarantees the loan. Chazal extend the idea of Arev a little bit further to say that sometimes if I direct you to incur a loss, I instruct you to incur a loss, and you act on my direction, then I, willy-nilly, I just automatically become a guarantor to make up that loss to you.
You need a Kenyan?
You don't need a Kenyan. You don't need a Kenyan. So you can see the paradigm case. I gave you one example. Look at the Gemara in Kedushin Daf Vav Amud Beis, top of page 15 on the source sheets. Amar Rava, Tain Mana Laploni, Ve'akadesh Anilach. If I say to a woman, I want you to give money to somebody else, and through your giving that money to a third party, I'll be mekudesh to you. So mekudesh is midin arev. Why? Because implicit in the woman following the instructions of the man to incur a loss is the man, the generation of the man's liability to reimburse her for it. Do you see that?
See
that
again?
Yeah, so let's say Ben just got engaged, right? So Ben turns to Rachel and he says, Rachel, I want you to give $1 to Yoni.
Sure.
And then Rachel says, sure. And Rachel gives $1 to Yoni. If you said that should work for your kedushin, that would be a good kedushin. Because she relied on your instruction, you implicitly assume liability. You assume liability for her loss, which is her loss is $1. So that generates his chayvus from you to her for $1, and that amount is going to be chal for the kedushin. This is the idea of arev. Right, you're basically accepting responsibility for whatever losses she suffers at your inducement. Right, so the Gemara also talks about cases that were similar cases. I think the Ritva says the same principle. If you were to tell Rachel Zruk Mana Liyam, take that coin and toss it into the ocean, mm-hmm. and that should be effective for our kedushin, that would also be valid from the same principle of Arev, that you're accepting as chayvus, you're indemnifying her loss, which creates an obligation from you to her. Got it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Cole, you got it?
One quick question. If I were to say to Eliza, like, I'll be Makadish you with $1 if you give somebody else $1. In other words, I'm not assuming responsibility, but I'm making the kedushin contingent on her losing the amount of money that I give her. I assume that wouldn't work, right?
Well, I mean, if I think the principle here is if she is relying on your instructions to give it, that automatically is going to generate a kind. If she's relying to her detriment on your instructions, that's going to trigger a liability in you.
Okay.
You see that?
Yeah, that's okay. This is a couple
of
yeah.
Okay. So look here, just for example, look at 14. You can see that Pesach Choshen has this in two separate places. He gets this from Rikki Vager, which we'll see inside in a second. So on page 14, second to last source, you see that, Ben, you want to read it? See, Ayin Drish V'Chidosh L'Rikki Vager.
The
Pesach Choshen. Yeah, we're in the section which says Chiv Mitzad Arev.
Mm-hmm.
So this is trying to carve out a new way of explaining the liability for the Baal HaBayis causing the Poel to lose an opportunity by backing up. Yeah.
Because, like, the case of art is I tell you to do something, like, lose money. And
it's more direct.
And then I tell you to lose money. Here, like, the money's not. Like, even if you argue against. Like,
here, it's more implicit than in those cases.
Right. I think there's, like, certainly, like, a. Like, you don't have to take the Maharam Grinberg who argued that, like, this is, like, a harvacha. Like, you can say that, like, salary costs are still something that you're losing out. Without saying that this isn't the same thing as Arev.
Correct.
There's still some line between telling you to lose something versus now allowing you to have that salary.
Here there's a stage in between.
Yeah, there's certainly,
arguably.
There's certainly like a gradation.
Good. So, Ben, read the Pesach Choshen, sign in the Rabbi Kiva Eger. We'll see Rabbi Kiva Eger inside, and then I'll get back to Yoni's point.
Right, so Rabbi Kiva Eger.
Right. So he's saying, why do we have to try to figure out our sugya in terms of Dina de Garmi, the way Tosfos tries to do it? Why don't we just say that, look, I hired Ben, right? I say, Ben, come work for me.
Mm-hmm.
But you abandon all these other job offers that were on the table, right? Hiniach niskar alpiv hiniach balabayis acher, right? Yehechayiv midin arev. So he's thinking about it in terms of, you had a job offer from Yoni. And I say, Ben, don't take that job offer. Come work for me. Then you come to me, then I back out, and you get messed over. So he's saying, isn't there chiyuv? Don't I have liability mitam arev? Right? Because this is basically, to come back to Yoni's point, like me telling you, don't take the job offer from Yoni. And implicit in that, it's I'm telling you that I'll cover you for whatever you're losing by not taking the job offer from Yoni, just like the Gemara tells us I am when I say, take the dollar bill and throw it in the ocean.
Right.
Got it? Mm-hmm. Okay, now I think this is to help Yoni's concern. I am Perek Ches. Yeah, interesting point. He wants to say that the only time this principle of Midin Arev would work is if I induced you to not accept Yoni's offer when Yoni's offer was really on the table. Because then you could say that I told you to throw something away in the same way of the classic Arev case, in the same way as in the classic Arev cases, I'm telling you to toss away a coin. Right? But if it's just like a theoretical possibility that, oh, maybe you could have found alternative employment, that's not going to be enough to generate Midin Arev. So I think this is trying to address your concern, Yoni.
Yeah, I would say it doesn't do enough, though.
Because there's a distinction between...
It's not your money. It's like the money...
But it's still potential.
It's still, potential, though. It's not mammon biyadcha.
Right. So you're saying he's distinguishing between two degrees of potential, like an actual offer that's on the table versus just a theoretically I could have gotten a different offer. Those both are still different from the case where I say throw away something that you have.
Also, did you specify, like, oh, work for me and don't work for him? Is that part of, like, what your statement is?
He doesn't tell us. He just says... typically, shniskar al pivi niach bal bayis acher yehichay midin arev.
I'm saying, like, arev might also require you to specify the loss, like, in your statement.
Yeah.
It can't just be, like, assumed or present. It has to be, like, part of the directive itself.
Whereas you're saying it can't just be that
work for me,
it turns out that you abandoned an offer. So maybe the Bala Bias would have to know that you abandoned an offer.
Or he has to say it, like, oh, work for me, don't work for him. I don't like him. You know, you should work for me.
It's a good point. Look at the next Pesachei Choshen. So that was in Perek Yud. Look at just the formulation in Perek Ches, Halacha Aleph. Go for it, Ben.
And so there's a Paul, Yikva, Imo, B'tchila, Scharo, V'tanai, Hatashlo. B'chol, Shem Pasak, Imo, Scharo, B'asa, Pula, V'lmose, Imo, Kifi, Hashem, Pasku,
Yes, that Yesh Omrim, if you look at the footnote, is this idea. Kivan Shal Piv Hiniach Hamalacha Acheres, Shahaisam is a Menas Lefano, Neschaiv Lomidin Arev. So you see, he's running with this idea of Arev. Okay. Turn also to Sir Kiv Eger. This is where the Pesachei Choshen gets it from. Of Iker Dina Degarmi, Yoni, want to read it for us?
Iker Dina Degarmi, Shkod Matosa Verosh, Hu Kuri Meir, Dain Dina Degarmi, Hainu, Belo Mishtavid Afmo Kach, Aval, Bishivid Afmo, Vizehu Masid Al Dvara, Havik Mo Kinyan, Vahacha Shisharan, Vialpi Dibor Minichan in Balabai, Havik Omer Zerok Manu Liam, Vichai Vanilach, Vidoki Div.
Yeah. All right. So he sounds like, you know, he doesn't even, the Pesachei Choshen tries to soften this by saying, oh, it must only be a case where, you know, it was only mizumenes lo, right? He really had an alternative offer on the table that he rejected. And the Reb Kiv Eger himself, it sounds, hacha shescharan bialpi dibur meinichin es balabatim, have keomer zrog man aliyam bechayv anilacha. Right, so he's saying you only need Dina Degarmi if there was no intent to hire him scharan v'alpi dibor meinichin as balabayas. But if you have that, scharan and alpi dibor hinichu, then you can mechayim mitam arev. Whereas the garmi stuff is a different basis of liability than chiyam mitzad arev. I mean, so here too, this is also similar, I think, to the promissory estoppel idea. how does Hischaivus Mitam Ariv work? You're not being paid out under the contract. That's clear, right? It's really liability for depriving you of your loss. And of course, the measure of damage here would be what? Under theory of Ariv? Ben, what do you think the measure of damage would be?
Under Ariv?
Theory of Ariv, how much would a Baal Bayis pay?
Would have made from the other person.
Yeah, I think the amount that the poet would have made working for the other guy. That's right. It's clearly not a Nezek-based liability because the Mechayiv is not Nezikin. The Mechayiv is the voluntary Hischaivus of the Ariv. Although you might say the voluntary Hischaivus only kicks in under these kinds of special situations. That's why you don't need a Maisa Kinyan to generate the Hischaivus of an Ariv. So it's a little ambiguous. We know there's a concept of Arev, and we know that's not the pure Kenyan theory, is not the pure Nezek theory. It's certainly its own category, but the conditions that generate it may come from either side, right? They may come from certain principles of Nezek or from the certain principles of contract. Okay?
There's significance, like you said, with like Havik Mo Kenyan.
Yeah. So that's in Vavashivit Atzmo. Right. What do you want to say about that?
I don't know. You're saying that part as an example with an Arivos, or are you saying something stronger, maybe more relating, bring us back like the Ramban and some type of Kinyan Kalchal to Malacha?
Right.
There's like some, but even the Chayvus itself is already like some right. type of
Kinyan. Like the one possibility in the Erech Shai reading.
Yeah, and then, like, there's some type of like.
This is like Aschalas Malacha yeah, based off.
Just in terms of like defining this type of Arevus, but there's like yeah. Kenyan esque something happening here.
Yeah, that's what I meant by it could be that what triggers the Arvus is the fact that there is Das L'Hischayev to pay the worker when he does the work.
Right.
So we're. That allows us to move the Kenyan earlier in time to the reliant, the induced reliance.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's...
The suggestion is, like, typically ingenious, but only it works. A guarantor in a loan is... So the creditor incurs a loss instantly by giving us $1,000 to this debtor, right? And the idea is of the guarantor is that I'm only going to do this, I, the creditor, I'm only going to give out this money to this, you know, person of dubious credit, it's going to come back to me one way or the other. So you're going to secure this loan because you're a hedge fund manager and you're very wealthy, and so one way or the other, I'm going to get back the $1,000. In the case of a worker, that is not the thing being guaranteed. The thing being guaranteed is in a set on the Rebbe Akiva Eiger model. The thing being guaranteed is the opportunity to work for money. Now, it's not clear to me that there's a good translation from the loan context to the employment context. Because the thing that's lost is not money. It's work.
Rabbi Jaeger's language isn't the standard model of Ari, right? It's not guaranteeing a loan. It's not model on the higher end of the. So either the which gets the objection is irrelevant.
No.
Or it is low based and then Rabbi Akiva is not appealing.
No, even if you're right what I'm saying is true. The point is you're
I think Yair is right. I think Yair is right to say though that we see from the Gemara in Kedushin itself that the concept of Arev is more expansive than just the loan case. Right?
That's fine. The point is I'm going to incur a loss on the either if it's the Kedushin case is fine. I'm going to incur a loss if and only if you promise to make that loss hold. Because throwing the money in the ocean is the same as paying the loan out. In this case, the point is the money's going to come back to me one way or the other.
Right.
This is not that. Because what's being guaranteed here is not money, it's work. It's actually it's not money, it's the machayev of money.
Right. I understand where you're getting at, Cole. Cole, I think tell me if this is right. You're saying that This is a variation of Yoni's point earlier, I think. You're saying that Arev makes sense if I'm instructing you to incur a loss for me.
Yeah.
Right? That's different from the Schiris Polem case, where I'm not instructing you to incur a loss for me. I'm instructing you to, you know, do something that's rationally in both of our rational self-interest.
Yeah.
Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah.
Except that you might say, in cases where I'm going to back out, essentially what I'm doing, or in cases where I backed out, it turns out that what I did was to instruct you to act. I instructed you to suffer a loss at no gain to you.
You didn't suffer a loss. All you did was forego an opportunity.
Right. So that was Yoni's objection.
I'm with you. So you can, the RA point, which I think is, again, ingenious, and I wouldn't have thought of it myself.
That's why you're not a Ricky Vager yet.
Yeah. So it's going to be, you're going to have to smuggle in some either heaped up Nezek or fall back on the contract.
Yeah. But I think Yoni's right to point us to the language of Rikki Vager in Drush V'Chiddush, where he actually says, you know, have a kimo kinyan, where maybe that Rikki Vager himself is trying to appeal to the later kinyan to bolster this. Right, I think
that's kind of along the lines of that Shreed.
Yes, correct.
Right. I hear that. Could be. Come on again, the awkwardness of the Shreed, but the more you think that the I guess this is also the awkwardness of the Ramban and Shulchanara, which is the problem and Shulchanara. The more you think that the Kenyan is an important moment, the more you think that the time before the Kenyan is unimportant.
Right. True, but they think that you might say things, and I think this is where the paradigm of Haschalas HaMelacha is helpful. The more Haschalas HaMelacha as a Kenyan is itself just an artificial way of making sure that parties aren't harmed by getting into these relationships. So we say, oh, once Haschalas HaMelacha is a Kenyan, he's entitled to be paid, etc., etc. Then you might think that you could also roll back the critical Kenyan time even to the moment of induced reliance.
Yeah.
So you have three, there are three stages of when the Kenyan could go into effect, right? Maisa Kenyan, or earlier than that, Haschalas HaMelacha, or earlier than that, induced reliance.
I was thinking the Haschalas HaMelacha to Maisa. For some people, the Haschalas HaMelacha is the Kenyan.
No, it is, right, but I'm saying, but it's, a lot of people think it's not as strong as a real Kenyan. Which we've seen in a few cases. Let me get one more mukar out on the table with respect to the Arev discussion. So here on page 15, you have the Ritva on the Mishnah in Bava Metzia Ayin Ham Beis. He's talking about the case where a Poel is Chozer B'davar Avod. And he says, Yoni, you want to read for us? Okay, so don't worry about the dilu shenanas part, but what's he saying? The reason why there's liability is what?
Right, have you friend, because you rely on promise.
Well, first of all, there's a promise, hiftiach, and there's reliance, and you suffer harm by the reliance, right? There's liability. What principle is that? Alright, what kind of principle is that?
I don't know if it's any principle. I think almost any of these of this could use a formulation like that. I'm looking for the nine.
Say it again, Yair?
I think any retail could use a formulation like this in the
sugya, and it would be consistent with whatever perspective they're taking.
Yeah, fair point. You're saying that this is just so vague. It's consistent with any theory of liability. Okay, but I would say, yeah,
it's not very general. It's not a bunch of contracts.
Right, I would say this is too broad to be contractual because he doesn't say whenever there's a kinyan. He says kol she'hivtiach. I think hivtiach is weaker than kinyan.
But the thing is contracts because we're talking employment here. His ruling sounds like it's much broader than just...
Yeah, I think that's right. Yair, don't you agree? So I think haftacha is weaker than contract. I also think that ilmale haftachasa lo hayabalo shem hefsid, that necessary condition wouldn't apply on a contract theory. Right? Because on a contract theory, you're liable just for making the contract. You already transferred the rights to the poel, so the poel is entitled to receive them. We don't require that he would not have suffered had he not relied on entering into this agreement. It's not a requirement for a contract based compensation. So Yair, do you hear what I'm saying? Right, but I think for Nezek, for contract theory, you don't need Nezek in order to justify the poel collecting. Right, the poel collects even if he would not have found, right, in the monopsony case, where there are no other employers, the poel still collects.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
So I do think that he's getting at not strict Nezikin, I want to say. Maybe it is. It doesn't sound like just a general Nezek theory. Or if it is a Nezek theory, it's a Nezek theory that has to do with some sort of special relationship of Sama Chavero Alav.
Can it just be like the Mordechai?
Right. So I think it might be like, would it be which part of the Mordechai? The idea that it's just Grama with his Chaivus?
Yeah, it's almost exactly what the Mordechai says.
Except that here he doesn't really require any his Chaivus to pay at any point. Unless that's Hiftiach L'Chaver L'Shalim.
Yeah. But it's not the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the Kavala Lame L'Chol Gramot, the Kavala L'Fir L'Shalim, Mirna L'Hefzot Shu Chayav. Isn't that pretty similar?
Depends if the Haftacha here has to come along with his Chayvus Mamon. Right, let's say I say...
Or you're saying if the reliance could just be not even monitored.
Exactly. Let's say I say, Yoni, meet me at the bridge. We'll go jogging together later today. You know, and you rely on that promise, and, you know, you show up there, and had you not relied on that, you know, things would have been better for you. Would have, whatever, it's not like that. So you still might think that there's liability here.
Mm-hmm.
Even though there's no Maisa Nezek, but there's liability based off the inducement. So again, so I think this formulation is going to lie somewhere in between the straight-up Nezek paradigm and the contract theory. Right, so the haftacha here is crucial for generating liability, the induced reliance to the detriment. This, in terms of formulation, this is the closest to the secular law principle of promissory estoppel. Literally, promissory estoppel is that there's quasi-contractual liability when I rely on your promise to my detriment. It's exactly what he's saying here, right? Anytime you rely on somebody's promise to your detriment, you're going to be entitled to compensation. So I think this also falls into this middle view of liability. And he's using this to explain liability for a breach of in Davar Havod. Okay. Everybody good with that part? Really a lot of fine conceptual distinctions here, and you see that Rishonim are struggling to understand this sui generis principle of liability. Now, I want to go actually a little deeper into this. So turn to page 15. This next short discussion comes out of Rabbi Kiva Eiger again. But in the first Rikki Vigra that we saw, he was more focused on distinguishing Nezek from Arvus, liability based off Midin Arev. And the next piece is a Rikki Vigra. He's going to argue, he wants to actually further distinguish between Garmi on the one hand and Davar HaAvod on the other hand. So it's the distinction that was really brought up first by the Ktsos. Rikki Vigra is going to really hammer it home that Garmi and Davar HaAvod are just two different principles. So we'll come back to this, Agavas Ashri. But look here at the Rikki Vigra at the top of page 16, bottom of 15. This is on Choshe Mishpah. Just these are the first one is the Rikki Vigra Sagos on Choshe Mishpah and Shin Lamed Gimel Sif Beis. So Rikki Vigra cites a bunch of Achronim, and he says their whole analysis is based off understanding liability for breach in Schiras Polim based off Dina de Garmi. He says, oh, but the Ramban didn't cite Dina de Garmi. Tosa cited Dina de Garmi. Ramban cites, what does Ramban say it is? What's the principle for the Ramban?
Davar
HaAvod. Okay. And then Rikki Vigra cites the Hagos HaShri, who actually has enough gemina between Davar HaAvod and Garmi. What's the Hagos HaShri's enough gemina? So go back to the Hagos HaShri on 15. Kol Yair, did you see the Hagos HaShri?
I did not
do that. So Hagos HaShri says something very interesting. When the Gemara talks about Davar HaAvod, when a poel backs out for a balabayas' work, that's balabayas is going to suffer an irreparable loss. Right? He needs the instruments for the funeral or for the wedding, and if the poel backs out, he's not going to have them, etc., etc. So some Rishonim teach that as Dina de Garmi. The Hagos HaShri says, why do we need to talk about this mitam dina de garmi? Let's see. Here, blah, blah. Right. So look at that Hagos HaShri.
Isn't Yes.
So he says, oh, you could be chayav garmi even without a kinyan, etc.
Oh, yeah. This is the one I emailed you about. I think
you get the kill. Okay, so the problem with that sugya, so the Gemara there says that if a poel backs out and it caused the Baal HaBayis an irreparable loss, the poel could be held liable up to, 50 times his salary or something. Okay? The Hagos HaShri says, well, why only up to 50 times? Shouldn't he be chayiv for up to whatever it is? Because he's a mazik, and a mazik is chayav for all damages. Why does the Gemara cap it? Why does the Gemara cap it at a certain multiple of his salary? That's Mechilas Rishonim there, whether that's actually true, and we'll talk about that when we talk about Chazara de Poel. Right? So he's saying, but if the principle here is Dina de Garmi, the Poel should be liable for any loss that he causes. There shouldn't be a liability cap at, a multiple of his salary. Reasonable question. Everybody see that? So he answers, he says, oh, maybe there's liability here even when you're putter mitzad garmi. Right? Even if there's no reason to mechayv mitam garmi, you're chayv for some other reason. And that other reason also should be capped. But had the mechayv here been garmi, it wouldn't have been capped and you would have paid for the full scope of damages. So what's the distinction? So the Gosh actually says the v'yishlamar part, v'yishlamar dehasam bayri, the case where the liability is capped at 40 or 50 times the salary or the value of the instruments, that's but also inyan shelo garma lo shem hafsid. The liability is capped in a case where the poel's breach didn't cause the loss. In what sense? In the sense that the loss would have been caused anyway, even if the poel... It's not the poel who caused the loss. Why? Because suppose this is the only poel in town, and had the Baal HaBayis not hired him, no one would have been able to do the labor, in which case the loss would have been suffered in any event. So it's not the breach, it's not the poel's...
The Gemara.
What?
That's not the case of the Gemara. No, like Davar
a number of it is not the work doesn't get done. It's that it's not a foregone game. It's that the is what I said 20 minutes ago. I don't think a davar avod is like there's only one guy who can. What do you do to wheat? You sheet. You harvest. Not harvest is a word that gets more sibilant than that. Anyway, it's not like the guy harvests wheat and the wheat is there. You know, you wanted to harvest 40 bundles or whatever of wheat, and he only harvests 20, so you got 20 out in the field, and those go unharvested. It's that doing the job incompletely will actually cost the Balabais money, more money to get it done in the future.
I don't think that's a standard reading of davar avod. We'll go deeper into it anyway when we look at that sugya carefully in Chazar de Poel. Just focus narrowly on the point of that Gaos HaShri. His argument is that were the mechayiv of davar ha'avod here, mitam garmi, the Poel should be chayiv for whatever damage he causes by backing out. So if the Balabayas suffers $1 million of harm from a $30,000 Poel breaching, the Poel should pay $1 million. Assuming that the liability here is garmi. That's the Agos Ashri's argument. Why then does the Gemara cap the liability at a multiple of the salary or the Poel's instruments? He says, because it must be the Gemara's case of davar avod is a case where the Balabais would have suffered the loss of not having his stuff harvested, even had this Poel not showed up to work. So the Balabais was going to suffer the loss because all his wheat's about to spoil. Luckily, he found this one Poel. Okay, he would not have been able to find other Poelim. Why?
If the work goes undone, the work goes undone.
Well, no, because usually you could just wait till the next day. Right here, the point is that if I don't find somebody to transport these milk bottles to the grocery store, they're going to spoil. And so I'll get nothing from them if this worker doesn't work for me.
Oh, I see.
That's davar ha'avod.
All right.
Do you get that?
What is the oven for?
Okay, so let me step back for a second. The classic case of davar ha'avod in the Gemara is, let's say, I need somebody to transport these milk bottles. If they don't get transported, they're going to spoil. And so if I hire a Poel and he backs out, and because he backs out, my milk spoils, Poel's chayiv.
Right.
But the Gemara says that the Poel is only chayiv up to a certain multiple of his salary. The Gozer says that's crazy. If the chiv here is mitam dina de garmi, he should be chayiv for the full value of the loss. It should be totally separate from his salary. Since when is garmi a multiple of your income? Right?
Okay.
So the Gozer says, oh, you're right. It must be that the davar ha'avod case is not really operating on principles of garmi. And why wouldn't it? Because maybe davar ha'avod is only operable in a case where garmi is not relevant. When would garmi not be relevant? When the poel is not the cause of the loss. How could the poel not be the cause of the loss? Because my milk was going to spoil. There's nobody in town to help me transport it to the grocery store. Luckily, I found this one guy and I contracted him to do it. Now that one guy wants to breach. So it's true that relative to the baseline of the contractual agreement for him to help me, he's causing me a loss. But that's not the relevant baseline for assessing Dina de Garmi. So mitzad Dina de Garmi, this Poel is going to be totally pater. He's not the cause of the loss. Since counterfactually, had I not hired him, I would have suffered the loss anyway. But relative to the baseline of contracts, that now we're in an employment agreement and I contracted him with Aschas and Malacha to move these milk bottles for me. If he breaches, he's chayav for the loss. It's a special kind of liability arising within contractual relationships. And part of that special liability is that it's capped at a multiple of the contract. That is the Hagos Ashri's argument. Do you see
that's
that?
That's a good argument, but not the fact that it trades on this 40-50 ambiguity is not. It's a good argument in abstract.
Okay.
It's even to place it independently of the. He doesn't need that. Yeah, is what I'm saying. We could correct this argument independently of this whole 40-50.
Correct. We don't need the. We could do away with the 40-50. Just how he gets there. Right.
This seems true.
Right. So this is very, very crucial for us because, first of all, he's disentangling Garmi from Davar Avod, not just in name. Right, the Ketzos did it in name and as a way of solving that, oh, the principles of Nezikin don't seem to apply here. The Hagos HaShri is doing it in a different way, just again to explain why the liability is capped at a multiple. But look at his formulation. He's saying you're not Chayev Mitzad Nezek because it fails the counterfactual test. You're not the cause because the loss would have been caused even without you. Right? So it fails the but-for causation test. Now, the Hagos HaShri says, V'yesh lomar, when you want to read it for us, the Hasa Mairi.
V'yesh lomar at the Mairi, v'oto inyan shelo garma lo shum hesed, kigon, sh'apishtan hayasharui kvar, v'shash nizkir, eidu lo hayachir matuyin, mikomakom kemash nizkiru lo kvar tzvichin lasot.
Yeah, so I think that last phrase is crucial. The reason why there's liability, mitzad davra, but even though it doesn't suffice for Nezek is because kivan sheniskeru lo kvar tzrichim lasos. So which paradigm is he leaning into within Davar HaAved?
Or contract.
Contract.
Yeah.
For sure, right? He's saying that Davar HaAved is triggered by the fact that there's a contractual obligation to perform the service. And so if you breach within that obligation, even though the rules of Nezek would not justify holding you liable, special liability rules, special Nezek rules within a contract theory are enough to hold you liable. This becomes even clearer. So that was all the Hagos HaShri. Rabbi Kiveger appealed to that to show that Davar HaAved is distinct from Garmi. And he points out that this raises an interesting question. He says, if this is true, then maybe the Poalim or Chozer should always be Chayiv. Bala Bias, who's, look about that, Rabbi Kiveger on Shulchan Aruch, top of page 16. So, Vakashali. You see that, Yoni? Vakashali?
Yeah.
So we have a kashali.
The kashali, the fima de naka haha, shukhan ach, the dar malabai, the gabi poli, mikri dabar avud, in kin, gam lohayu mosim lahasrotam yechayev.
Yeah. So he points out based on Hagos HaShri that Davar HaAved and Garmi are two separate things. The Shulchan Aruch says that for a Baal HaBayis to be Chayev Garmi for depriving a Poel of alternative employment, the Poel had to have been able to have secured alternative employment counterfactually. Kiveger thinks that once we recognize Davar HaAved as the basis of liability, maybe the Baal HaBayis should be Chayiv even when the Poel could not have found alternative employment, a la the Hagos HaShri, who says that Davar HaAved applies in those cases, even when Garmi doesn't. See that? So, this is a nice nafkemina between the Arev paradigm, which seems to have to assume that, oh, I deprived you of a loss, right? I'm chayiv for depriving you of the alternative loss. Same for a Nezek paradigm. I'm mazik you through depriving you of a loss. And on both of those on one side. And on the other side, this idea of Davar HaAved, according to the Hagos HaShri and Rabbi Kiveger, who think that, no, as a special knas or a special liability within contract relationships, you could be held liable for breach even if you didn't really deprive of an alternative possibility. And the chiddush here being that we're still pre-Kinyan. Right, within Kinyan, after Kinyan, it's obvious that you're liable to pay out the value of the contract. The chiddush here, Rabbi Kiveger, is that we'll extend that post-Kinyan principle to pre-Kinyan. See that? And hold you liable mitam Davar HaAved. So it sounds like Davar HaAved is like a Nezek liability that's triggered by contractual relationships. I don't want to get deeper into that point right now. Look at the next Rabbi Akiva Eger in Drush V'Chiddush, citing the Smas. So remember, the Shulchan Aruch says that liability pre-Kinyan is based off Davar HaAved, right? Look at the next Drush V'Chiddush, and the Rabbi Akiva Eger quotes the Sma, who says, oh, Davar HaAved just is Garmi. So you want to read that? That's a quotation of Shechanach. Shechanach says you're chayev for davar aved.
Right.
So the Sma says that you're chayev mitam din de garmi. That's what the Sma says. Rabbi Akiva gets very upset by this. What does he say? Yeah. He says it's inconsistent. Right. He's riding on two different horses. Right. One horse is a garmi horse, and the other horse is a davar aved horse. The Sma should not have conflated them. Notice again, he ends with this same kasha, vitema. See that Yoni, vitema, the imkain?
Yeah.
If it's true that the liability is really based on Tavar Avon and the Shulchan Aruch and not Garmi, then what?
The imkain, the Balabai, the Choser, the Tami Tavi Tavar Avik, the Shulchan Aruch, the imkain, Gam im Loim Mosim Polim, and Meshli Shtak Yer Chayav, the Shulchan Lehem, the
Sarah Fingo. Rabbi Kiyagel Shitasa, that he thinks that the standard to be held liable for Davar HaAved is lower than the standard to be held liable for Garmi. For Garmi, you can only be liable if you actually deprived him of an alternative opportunity. He thinks if you're a Mechayev Mishum Davar HaAved, the Baal HaBayis can be held liable even if the Poalim were not deprived of an alternative possibility, employment. Okay, big Chiddush.
Could you respond? I mean, it's a little bit Mechudash, but suggest that there's a difference between the Baal HaBayis case and the Poalim, in that by the Baal HaBayit there is actually Davar HaAved, and the milk is boiling, but for the Poalim it's not defined as Davar HaAved if there aren't other alternative employment options.
Interesting. So just in terms of getting to the definition of Davar HaAved.
Yeah, and then even the Agos HaShu would be more that it's not that Hesed wouldn't apply.
Yeah, it's interesting.
For Poalim.
Question is, would the so it's like a definitional issue, just how are Magdir Hefsid?
A little bit, but I'm saying it gets down to why his question doesn't apply.
Possible.
Not for me to apply either.
It is possible. It is possible. The other possibility is to figure out whether maybe Tagos Hashu only meant it post-Kinyan. Maybe he only had this idea of Davar HaAved post-Kinyan. Maybe he wouldn't extend it pre-Kinyan.
Yeah.
Rabbi Akiva is definitely thinking that you could.
Yeah, or Shonach does something past like Gosh Hashri. That would be like a simpler.
Right, he disagrees with it.
Yeah, he just says past like Gosh Hashri.
Right. Right. I need to think more exactly about that that theory, that idea of Rabbi Akiva. Cole, you have a question? You have a comment? Or, Yair, you had a comment?
No, I was just pausing.
Okay. So see, we're still fasting here, so we're like, you guys are feasting away in Eretz Yisrael.
What are they eating?
What?
What are they eating?
I don't want to hear.
Why do we have to fast? Like, are we living, can we, why do we fast nowadays? We have a Jewish state, things are great.
No? Isn't that in Ezra? In the Chavio, when they ask the Kohanim why they're going to fast out of a building in the second base of Mikdash? And they were like, God doesn't want your fast. God wants you to change your ways.
There you go. I think Cole's saying the opposite, though. Cole's saying we have Eretz Yisrael. We're not. Is that what you're saying, Cole?
No, but that was part of the question.
Yeah.
We're building a second base. Why do we fast?
Why do we
fast?
Right.
The point is, like, it's about your character more than it's about, like, a practical need of the.
Okay, so look here. Let's look here. What's that, Cole?
I mean, I already fasted, so you shouldn't cry over undrunk milk.
Right. So look here, let's look on page 16. I think this is 16, sorry, yes. Just notice the Pisrei Choshen in the third source, right after that, Drush V'Chiddush. He quotes Rabbi Akiva Eger, and he thinks that the standard view is not to distinguish between Davar HaAved and Garmi. Because Rabbi Akiva Eger is saying that, and Agos Hashri, that you should be chayav for Davar HaAved even when you weren't the cause of the Hefsid, She says, "Vamidere shar haposke mashma shadavar avad hainu hafsid." It's an interesting point. Whether this gets to Yoni's idea, right? When you're magdir avod, davar ha'avod, is that going to be defined differently from our normal way of thinking of hefsid?
Well, I'm not sure if he's making the point that this isn't defined as hefsid, or is his point that we don't pass on because it's a shriek?
Ah.
Is it just like a simpler point?
Right. So then the hago, is it so this the hago sashri who's the shitas yachid, or is the
creator's extension of it too, like our right. context?
Yeah. Look at Riki Vega at the bottom of 16. This is the last source I really want to cover today. So Riki Vega here is getting Drish V'chiddish, an Ayin Vav, an Arsakya. So he pushes this distinction between Davar Avod and Garmi further. So Yoni, why don't you take it away again? Mimele Yaslanu Din Chadash.
Mimele Yaslanu Din Chadash, Shita Rosh, Belo Etchel Ledidan, בעבר הזמן שכירת פועלים צריך לשלם מדינה דגרמי היינו דווקא בעבר הזמן אבל לא בהוזל השל.
This is an interesting idea. He wants to say that when the Gemara says you're liable for depriving the poel of a lost opportunity, that's only if, you know, right, so the poel came to you and then you told him I have no work for you, and then by the time he gets back to the marketplace there are no other employers looking for work. But if by time he gets back to the he gets back to the marketplace in time, just I guess by now, huzal hashar, so now the price of labor has gone down. Okay, so then what? Then he thinks you're not chayv mitam din
hadgarmi?
Could
it go down anyways, I guess?
Maybe. But he says, "Aval l'shitas anamuka Yosef." That's citing the Ramban. Shekasav degabe pol im chayev mitam dehaved davar ha'aved af bechi hagav nachayev. He thinks a nafkamina between basing liability on garmi and basing it on davar aved is whether the balabayas is chayev for causing the poel to be hired at a lower market rate. Mitam garmi would be pater. It's too indirect. I guess the idea is that the market fluctuates on its own. And so you can't really say that I'm responsible for causing you to get that lower market rate. But mitam davar aved, the balabais would be chayev. So this is just another example where the where Riki Vega thinks that the threshold for liability for davar avod is lower than the threshold for garmi. Now look, now here's the crucial line. I want everybody to take a close look at this. On line 3 in the Rabbi Kiviger on 16. The shorish davar avod niret. Go for a yoni. Yeah. So why is it that the standard of liability for davar avod is lower, it's easier to become liable for davar than it is for garmi? Because the real idea is that im b'chazaraso mafsid, if breaching is going to cause a loss, lo shari le rabbanan lachzor, Chazal don't permit you to breach. That's why the standard of liability is lower. So what's he saying? Are you here?
Sounds like it's like a contract-based theory.
100%. I think it's 100% right. It's exactly a
it's
contract.
It's like it sounds like an economic theory a little bit also.
Maybe the reason why they extend the contract theory is for economic reasons. But that's exactly right. He's saying that Davar Aved is a lower threshold because Chazal made this special rule when it comes to breaching an agreement that's going to trigger an imminent loss. even though we're pre-Kinyan. Right? So even though the hiring here was just B'dibor, I say show up, and it's not going to be binding until there's a Kinyan or until there's a, let's say, Tzchalas Malacha. If it's a Davar HaAvid, then there are special rules that go into effect of Lo Shari LeRabbanan Lachzor. That's a lower threshold than Nezikin, and there's different rules. So liability is going to be capped at a certain percentage, maybe, of the contract. But I think it's exactly right to say this is clearly a special rules of liability arising under breach of contract. Again, not collecting the value of the contract. That's not what's going on here. Right, Yoni?
Yeah.
So look here, Odnir Nafkamina. This is the last point Rabbi Kivagar makes. The next paragraph. Odnir Nafkamina bin Muki Yosef Rashba. So the Rashba is the Garmi guy, and the Muki Yosef is the Devar Avad guy.
You want me to read?
Yep.
Okay, Ha'ima Shar B'dalet, Ve'amiyot Nidgaru B'gimel, V'dinin D'garmi Leka D'matzi Amar Shema Lo Ha'yita Motzil Haskir B'dalet.
So, suppose the Balabayas deprives the Poel of an alternative work opportunity. The market's split, but most Poelim are getting paid Gimel, some are getting Dalet. How much does the Balabayas have to pay? Gimel. Under a theory of Garmi, he would have to pay Gimel because, kind of a motzi mechaver el varaya, we'll assume that the amount that was mazik you for is the rove amount, right? What most people are getting. Okay? So, lekadin the Garmi rak be Gimel. Val etaman and muke Yosef to have a davar avod. Go.
My ears turned off, so.
Oh. Val etaman and muke Yosef to have a davar avod. Kivan de efshar. Listen to this. Kivan de efshar shehoyi motzim bedalid v'have pseida b'chazaraso enu yochal lachzor v'meila tzarech l'shalem rak b'masha yuchal lomar hiskiru atzmeicha. Whereas if it's a theory of davar ha'avod, since it's conceivable that they may have been hired at four and it was totally wrong for him to breach, so then we're going to be mechayev him to pay the higher amount of dalid. So this is another example where the threshold for Davar Aved is lower than the threshold for Garmi, according to Rishi Vigor.
How much did he agree to? The Baal Bayit.
It's pre-Kinyan, let's say $1 million. But he deprived him of an opportunity elsewhere. Right, so how much was he going to make elsewhere? We don't know. Market split. So if most people are making 3 under a theory of Garmi, he'd only get 3. If some people are making 4 under the theory of Davar Aved, he would get 4.
Just because that was possible.
Right, so that's exactly the point. He thinks that because Davar Aved works with some special, almost like a knas, or special rules that get invoked in virtue of the wrongfulness of the breach, the benefit goes to the aggrieved party.
Where does he get that from? Like this did. This is like a massive...
It's a huge chiddush.
Yeah, where does he get this from?
I don't know. But it will be good. That's less of an interesting question to me than the fact that, conceptually speaking, Mikivagar is A, he does a lot of good work to distinguish Davar Avod from Garmi, and B, he has an account of what's different about Davar Avod. And that is that Lo Shari Le Rabbanan Lachzor, that Chazal made it very, they imposed like specific penalties almost for breaching party in cases of Davar Avod, which sounds like an economic theory. An economic theory that ties liability not to nezek but a special kind of nezek to shore up contractual relationships. Okay, good. Everybody good with that? Our Israel contingent, you guys there?
Yeah.
Okay, any comments?
I agree with your analysis.
What's that?
I agree with your analysis.
Okay, so good. So what we covered today is the spectrum of views that lie in the no man's land between the pure Kenyan views and the pure Nezek views. So today was to capture all the in-between categories, the special Davar Avod and the special takana chazal of the Nesivis, the Arev idea raised by Ricky Vager, and the Umdin Adas idea raised by the Nesivis. And the kind of three real possibilities are whether it's an extension of Nezek, the other possibility is that it's an extension of contract, or like a special Nezek arising within contract, or this other idea of Arev, which is more an idea of a special sui generis hischaivus, to be makabel achrayus for lost opportunities. Yeah, cool.
Who's your favorite representative of the
straight up
Kenyan view?
Of the straight up Kenyan view? We'll see. I think the Ramban is one of them. The Ramban post Kenyan. Next, the Bach. Yes, I'll talk about the Bach tomorrow. Next Chabur, I want to talk about the Bach. I think actually the Chazon Ish is an even stronger representative of the straight up Kenyan view. Did you see the Chazon Ish yet? The Chazon Ish says that if the Baal HaBayis breaches, not only does he pay the Poel's salary, but it has all the dinim of the salary of a Poel, such as you have to pay him on time, you can't pay him in Shavek SF. So he's not just saying that he's entitled to the value of the contract. He says it's as if the Poel did all the labor and he's being paid wages for the labor that he did.
Okay. No, that would be the strongest. Okay.
Right, so it has the Isser of Halana Schar Sachir, etc., etc. All right, but we'll talk about that. That's what I want to pick up with the next Chabura, and then from there move on to the Poel Batel issues. All right? Yasher Koach, everyone.
I'm going to die.